Our next speaker is Valerie Poletta. She is a senior research associate at Health Resources in Action, a nonprofit public health organization in Boston. She provides research and evaluation services that inform and that inform health program planning and measure impact. This includes conducting community health assessments and evaluation studies for health departments, hospitals, foundations, and other clients with the goal of providing salient, actionable data for program and strategic planning. She holds a master's degree from the Harvard School of Public Health. Welcome, Valerie.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and since I'm based in Boston, I'd like to say welcome to the city of Boston. For those of you who are visiting, I hope you're having a good time so far and it's not too cold for you. Before I start, I want to recognize the contributions of my colleagues who are listed on the slide as co-authors. Margaret Reed and Eugene Barros are from the Division of Healthy Homes and Community Support at the Boston Public Health Commission, which is our local health department here in Boston. And Lisa Wolf and Catherine Duart I work with in the Research and Evaluation Department at Health Resources in Action. All right, I should have figured out which, here's the arrow. Okay. So I have no relationships to disclose. During this presentation, I'll be sharing key findings from a qualitative research study that we conducted with Section 8 landlords here in Boston, which explored their perceptions of healthy housing practices, including how landlords view their role in creating a healthy home environment for their tenants, in addition to what barriers they may experience in implementing these healthy housing practices, what motivates them or what would motivate them to implement these practices, for example, making units smoke-free, and also what would facilitate the adoption of these practices to ultimately help guide future initiatives that may include landlords as an important stakeholder. Just a little bit of background before I jump into the study in terms of why we embarked on this project. In 2010, the Health Commission launched the Healthy Section 8 and Affordable Housing Demonstration Project, the goal of which was to improve the home and health environment of low-income children and families. They had several objectives related to this goal. However, for this presentation, I'll be focusing specifically on the objective regarding landlord engagement for healthier housing. And so the Health Commission partnered with Health Resources in Action to conduct an evaluation of the demonstration project. And so as part of that evaluation, we did conduct a survey with landlords among many other data collection activities, which I won't have time to go into. However, the findings of this survey is what led us to conduct a qualitative study to further explore landlord perceptions. I will share that what was nice that we did find that the survey findings were really well aligned with the qualitative study findings. Just to ensure we're all on the same page in terms of what I mean when I say healthy housing, a safe and healthy environment is defined by HUD as one that meets the following characteristics. And while these characteristics can definitely be affected by tenant behaviors, landlords also play a critical role in maintaining the overall condition of a rental property. And so according to the National Center for Healthy Housing, landlords can implement various practices to facilitate a safe and healthy environment, which include some of the ones that you see listed there. And so we explored all these practices in our qualitative study, such as lead paint abatement and making units smoke-free. However, despite the role that landlords can play, I think what we found is that data on what landlords think about implementing these healthy housing practices was largely lacking. So when we conducted a lit review, what we found is that while there's a growing body of literature regarding the relationship between environmental triggers and health, a lot of these studies tend to focus on the tenant perspective. There are studies out there that look at the landlord perspective, but they're primarily quantitative in nature, and they tend to focus on one specific healthy housing practice. Some of the most common ones are, as you might imagine, around smoke-free housing, as well as lead abatement. So we really felt it was important to build upon the existing literature to further examine qualitatively what landlords think about the range of healthy housing practices that they could be engaged in. In addition, Section 8 landlords specifically, as you might imagine, offer a unique perspective on these issues because of their interaction with a fairly low-income population who are more exposed to environmental safety and health hazards such as secondhand smoke, and also experience higher rates of health conditions such as asthma. So these are our research questions, and we basically aim to understand how Section 8 landlords view their role in creating a healthy home environment, to identify both the perceived barriers and benefits to implementing these practices, and also to ask them for suggestions on what might help them ease the adoption of these practices. So we completed 5 focus groups with almost 40 Section 8 landlords. We worked with the Metropolitan Boston Housing Partnership, which is a nonprofit housing agency based here in Boston. They, on behalf of us, sent a recruitment email to their listing service, which includes over 2,000 landlords. And so these landlords then self-selected to participate and were screened for eligibility. And this table shows our segmentation strategy. So basically, our focus group participants were segmented by both rental property size as well as their level of engagement in healthy housing practices to see if there might be any differences by these characteristics. So small rental properties were defined as buildings with fewer than 5 units, and large rental properties were defined as buildings with 5 or more units. And then level of engagement in healthy housing practices was determined by whether all of their Section 8 units were required to be smoke-free, lead-safe, and use integrated pest management. So ultimately, you can see we conducted 4 focus groups with landlords who were considered less engaged, 1 focus group with landlords who were considered more engaged, and I will acknowledge that asterisk is there because we found some difficulties recruiting landlords who fit both the criteria of being of large rental properties and being more engaged, so we weren't able to recruit enough participants for that focus group. As with all research studies, there are some limitations that I do want to acknowledge. We used a non-random sample, as I mentioned. We used a listing service. It is possible that landlords who had more positive experiences with healthy housing would be more likely to participate in a focus group. And because we used the listing service, we were only able to reach out to landlords for whom we had their contact information. So there's a strong possibility of selection bias there as well. And as with self-reported data, there's the possibility that the participants might feel that it's more socially desirable to report positive experiences, just as a few examples. However, I think despite these limitations, our hope is that the focus group data that I'm about to share with you can provide some useful insights regarding landlords' attitudes, perceptions, regarding the successes and the challenges of implementing healthy housing practices, specifically in an urban environment such as Boston. So when we ask landlords about how they view their role in the healthy home environment, I would say that overall they were fairly clear that they were responsible for any issues relating to the property as a whole. It became a little bit more muddled when we talked about issues specific to a unit, where tenants' behaviors may play more of a role. I think the most obvious areas where they felt their responsibility was clear was regarding lead abatement, because they were legally obligated to do that. And then regarding pest management, they sort of felt a financial responsibility to maintain a standard of living. Although I will note that when they talked about pest management, they really were dealing with pest control rather than preventing pests in the first place. As this second quote indicates, a landlord's physical presence on a property was considered really important for them to be vigilant and sort of be proactive about creating a healthy housing environment and to avoid the repercussions of inspections, as the previous presenter discussed. Consequently, there was often this theme of shared responsibility. It was very rare that landlords considered something to be solely their responsibility. And you can see from this quote of a landlord talking about pest control, it's everybody's responsibility. There's too much pressure on the manager. It's you and the world, and I can exterminate every day and still have pests to control. So I think there was this sense that they just didn't have a lot of control around many of the issues that they were dealing with. Often related to cooperation from the tenants. Oops. When we examined perceived barriers, tenant behavior was definitely the most frequently discussed barrier among landlords, of both whether they were from small or large rental properties. And tenant behaviors often include issues with lack of their cooperation to deal with things like pest management, poor communication between the tenant and the landlord, for example, the tenant not reporting an issue, as well as issues around home management and sanitation, which were often related to pest control. This quote sort of gives you the example of bed bugs, which was a common topic. Financial burdens associated with implementing these practices also emerged as a key barrier for landlords, sort of unsurprisingly, often related to issues around the cost of pest control services. So you can imagine with bed bug extermination, it starts in one unit, but they need to address that unit as well as the surrounding units. And while there are practices that the landlord must implement, the tenant is also responsible for doing things like dry cleaning or applying, you know, high dry temperatures for their sheets and whatnot. In addition, the difficulties of enforcing healthy housing policies was also discussed, mainly in connection with making units smoke-free. The enforcement of making units smoke-free was really viewed as a daunting task, particularly for property managers who may supervise over 100 to 200 units. And you can see from this quote that even when they did implement policies, there was this sense of frustration. You know, I put it on the lease and they still smoke. I can smell it coming through the vents. And if I call to complain, it's his word against mine. So there's really no control over that. Regarding perceived benefits, landlords were concerned with protecting the safety of their tenants. And they really view that as a primary benefit a lot of these healthy housing practices, such as this first quote, I have a tenant whose child has asthma, so I'm cautious about using chemicals. I don't want this child to get sick. Participants really spoke about providing good living conditions for their tenants. And then there are the financial benefits. I think, you know, this is a source of income for property managers and landlords. There is a bottom line there. And so they talked about the cost of hiring pest control, as well as the importance of, they realize the cost savings of making units smoke-free, things like, you know, the paint job will last longer, or you won't have to get a new carpet as often. So in summary, these are the following key themes that emerged from the focus groups. I think it's clear that landlords have a lot of responsibilities regarding maintaining the condition of their rental property and complying with housing codes, and they really feel like there's a lack of guidance and support. So even though they recognize the benefits of implementing these practices for their tenants as well as themselves in terms of cost savings, they'll often get deprioritized for more pressing issues. Lack of tenant cooperation was really a common source of frustration. Financial constraints, I think, especially with limited budgets, their budgets often come from rental payments. So if the rental payment is late, for example, they explain that they're not able to address some of the housing issues. And while enforcing a smoke-free policy was really viewed as a challenge for a landlord of any property size, I think it was seen as especially overwhelming for property managers who are supervising hundreds of units. And while management companies they appear to have more resources, they have more staffing, they might have a higher budget, it's really the small landlords who are then struggling because they don't have the similar staffing and resources as the large properties. We also, as I mentioned, asked landlords for suggestions, and many of them did revolve around costs. So you can see for a person who has to watch the budget, who has to find money, if you can tell me I can save money somehow, that would be helpful, or explaining the benefits to owners and property managers about how much money they might be able to save if they, for example, made a unit smoke-free, were considered helpful suggestions. So in conclusion, I think landlords are important stakeholders to consider in Healthy Homes work, and when developing initiatives that might engage landlords, it'll be important to both reduce the barriers that they either experience or perceive, and also to leverage the benefits of implementing these healthy housing practices. In order to facilitate greater cooperation, for example, between landlords and tenants, which was really a point of tension, housing agencies could clarify their respective roles and responsibilities, perhaps requiring tenants and landlords to attend meetings or orientations or trainings together to sort of build a relationship, which will really also help improve communication between these two parties. According to the landlords, I think providing any additional support and guidance for tenants around home management issues, sanitation of their units was seen as useful, especially for vulnerable populations. Landlords were also really interested in receiving information themselves, particularly around pest management, advocacy around landlord rights and legal services, and effective communication with tenants. I do want to note that this study was conducted in Boston, where there are a lot of housing resources available for landlords. However, the majority of participants in our focus group study were unaware of the range of services available to them. So given that, I think better promotion of existing resources through increased marketing, visibility, and dissemination would be a critical next step. And then as I discussed, participants indicated that showing how much money could be saved would be really helpful in encouraging landlords to implement things like pest management and smoke-free policies, as well as supplementing the cost of some of these expenses, which were seen as quite prohibitory. And so the results of this exploratory study, I think, are important in examining the perceptions, the attitudes, and behaviors of landlords towards healthy housing practices. And hopefully housing agencies and policymakers can use this information to guide future strategies that will engage landlords in implementing these healthy housing practices. And before I end, I do want to acknowledge the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development, who funded this research by awarding the Boston Public Health Commission for the Healthy Section 8 and Affordable Housing Demonstration Project. There was a community advisory board as part of the demonstration project, of which all members were really useful in providing guidance and informing our approach. And we couldn't have done this study without the Metropolitan Boston Housing Partnership. And then lastly, I wanted to note Shanice Chris, who is a doctoral candidate at the Harvard School of Public Health, assisted us with coding of the focus group data. And with that, I'd like to say thank you for listening, and I look forward to any questions or comments you may have at the end of the presentation. Thank you.